Well, some of you who peruse the internet on a regular basis know the name Soysha Fayal, the website What Does It Mean? She's in France, and it looks like we are going to be the first people in the world to interview her about this website and about the fascinating things that go on. And I'm telling you, very interesting material. In a moment, we'll take your phone calls with our guest Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. Simeon, in your remote viewing, have you ever found yourself in a situation you wished you didn't get into, where it scared you or frightened you?
Well, from time to time, you do view particular targets, maybe where there's been an accident or a plane crash or something like that, or a space shuttle, Challenger disaster, things like that. It can make you feel a little woozy, but it's just really a viewing session. It's like looking at a movie. You can always get up and leave the movie theater, and you can always end a session anytime you want. I don't find the effects last more than a few hours. But the whole idea, it's really just kind of gathering information. You're supposed to be a little detached from it. So I don't really think there are any permanent effects. But, George, you know, I just actually want to give you feedback on the viewing you just did.
Because all right, sure.
I was looking around, and I have to say I turned over one of the planetary intelligence bookmarks that I just had printed up,
mm-hmm.
and there on the back is a stick figure.
Ah!
It's a brush figure, and it just happened to turn out this way. It's actually the center figure on the planetaryintelligence.com website, which you can click through. Everyone can see this, clicking through the Coast website. That figure right in the center, which I had my graphics artist design, it's a brush figure, but it's drawn by hand, and it was sitting right in front of me. And I turned it over. I didn't see it when you first said that, but your other sort of viewing was of a scribble.
Yes.
There actually is a viewing session done by Peter Sorensen. He actually works with us in the crop circle research. Many people know him. Remote viewing uses these ideograms. I'm sure you've seen them before, George. They're like scribbles. They come from your subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of those within arm's reach of my left hand, a viewing session that Peter did, which has these ideograms on it. And those are scribbles, and that's exactly what you described. I didn't do them, but so I've got the stick figure and the scribbles within 2 feet of me. So I guess you got a hit, George. You got
all right. We're high. Ben Kingsley did that in a movie he was in where, you know, he would constantly scribble like that, moving his pen, and then he'd come up with an object.
So you've seen how it's done. And we start with these ideograms. They're like holograms. This is one of the things that Ingo developed. It's a way of getting kind of a holistic perspective on the target just by letting your hand move, and we call it an ideogram.
I had just seen that movie. And I said to myself, gosh, I hope to meet Kingsley one day, because he's a great actor.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he played the role of Mahatma Gandhi in another movie. And sure enough, about 2 weeks later, I'm at a small restaurant in Los Angeles. And who's in front of me waiting to be called but Ben Kingsley?
Wow, there's a synchronicity.
Yeah, there he was. Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good morning. This is Derek from Boston, Massachusetts.
Sure, Derek. Hi there.
Hi. Hi, how you doing to your guests as well?
I
interesting
know.
Conversation tonight. I am totally blind. I lost my sight about 20 years ago. I dream quite vividly. I'm wondering, can blind people remote view?
Well, that's a good question. I think that blind people can view. And I'm sure that you can do as well as anybody else. You know why? Because it doesn't actually physically use your eyes.
Right.
It just uses the part of your brain that assembles images. And if that part of you is fully functioning, then you can view. The only thing about it, Derek, is that to get your feedback, you need to be able to see the photograph.
Ah.
And in the absence of that, you would have somebody describing to you what you view to kind of give you oral feedback instead of the visual.
Exactly.
But I'm sure it could be done, and it's an important thing to experiment with to see, because the viewing doesn't come through your physical senses, so there's no reason why it shouldn't work. In fact, there have been people that worked with blind individuals at some of these IRVA conferences.
Okay.
In the past, in the last one in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, there's actually one coming up in about 2 weeks. In Vegas.
Well, I may have to check you guys out online.
Sure.
And see if I can pay you guys a visit.
Sure, we'd love to see you, and it's something that's really worth looking into.
Excellent, thank you.
All right. Hey, Derek, you still with us? How long have you been blind?
I've been blind for 21 years.
How old are you now?
I'm 34.
So around 13 or so, you lost your sight. What happened to you?
Domestic violence.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of those situations. But I'm much better now. I'm a better person. It's just made me stronger.
You seem like you're doing all right. Was it difficult in the beginning?
It was very difficult in the beginning, but I had to deal with the child abuse at the time. I began to deal with the blindness 3 years later.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing better.
Thank you.
Thanks, Derek.
All right, take care.
Yep. He seems to be doing real well, as a matter of fact, Simeon.
Yeah.
First time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yeah, my name's Jimmy, and I'm calling from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hey, Jimmy.
How you doing? I listened to your show for quite some time now. I really like what you do there. My question is remote viewing something that has to be taught over a period of time? Is it something that you could explain how to do over the air? Exactly how is it done?
Great. Yeah, that's the thing about it. It does seem to take some time. And I haven't, even though people want to be able to learn this by videotape and so forth, remotely, I guess, so to speak, I'm not convinced you can literally learn it effectively without someone there that knows how it's done. I mean, you can always practice by yourself with someone giving you, you know, pictures in the folder or something like that, or objects in the box. But, you know, the thing about it, Jimmy, is we've all acquired a lot of bad habits, quote unquote, from our conscious mind, which is to believe all the thoughts in our minds, the noise, the chatter, the so-called monkey mind.
Yeah.
And what RV teaches you to do is separate that out, which may or may not be accurate. There's always some aspect of it which it is, but there's so much technicolor 3D invention that the conscious mind does, because that's its job in life, is to create structures around you from your visual and auditory input, that it seems to take time to stop listening to that chatter and focus on the RV signal, which paradoxically is very faint and transient. And that's the thing to pick up, is that the most ephemeral transient sensations in your awareness are the most accurate ones. And here's the thing about it that makes it so interesting. The more uncertain you feel about your viewing session, the more accurate it tends to be, because the more your subconscious is functioning and you're listening to it, the more your conscious mind, unless you've had a lot of training, feels somewhat uncomfortable with that, because it's used to running the show. And what the training shows you is that uncertain feeling is a good feeling. That shows you you're entering a chaotic mode where your mind can reorganize, self-organize around a different psychic signal, a different signal. But a lot of people find that uncertainty a little uncomfortable, because we're used to looking good in front of other people, being in control all the time. And remote viewers have to learn to surrender to their own subconscious processes, which feel faint and transient and not all that strong as a signal. And that's something that takes time to learn. So for that reason, I'd say it takes a while to learn to do it, not because you can't do it, but you have to not listen so much to the conscious mind and more to the subconscious, and that takes practice.
So it can be learned. You don't have to, you know, you don't either have a talent for it or you don't. It's something that can be learned.
Oh, I think people can learn it. I think I've seen people progress from year to year, people that I know.
Some people are better than others, Simeon.
Yeah, it's like musical ability a little bit. I think that's the best analogy.
Right.
Everyone has some degree of music ability. Some people can whistle a tune. Some people are virtuosos. And certainly there's some really good viewers and people that are more challenged with it. But I think this is built into us. I mean, I think if you can breathe, you can RV, because we all have this, well, whatever you want to call it, this kind of spiritual component, this non-physical component that kind of is part of who we are. It's connected to our body so intrinsically, we don't even see it. But that's the part of you, I believe, that's doing the viewing. And it's a question of being aware of that aspect of yourself. And that takes some time. But I would encourage everybody to practice by themselves, just by having a friend put pictures in the folder and see how much you get. You'll get a lot more than you think you can get.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate your time. Sure.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Love the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. Now, I don't want this to count as my 5 for 5 remote viewing, but are you wearing 2 different color socks?
No. No, I'm not, George. They match.
That's why I didn't want it to count as one of my remote viewing.
Let's... You know, George, this is not 100% accurate. You're scoring so far 4 out of 5. I think that's pretty good. That's 80%, and I'd be happy with that.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Crystal. I'm going through Santa Clarita right now.
Hello, Crystal.
My question is, when I flew in an airplane from Denver back east to Harrisburg, It's about crop circles. I was noticing, you know, when you're from overhead, the Midwest looks like a patchwork quilt. You know, the farm fields with the circular pattern they farm in. It's always in a it's always inset in the square plot of land that they farm.
Right.
I was wondering if these crop circles are somehow a map, a way of communicating their location, number one. The other question I had was there was one in particular crop circle formation. It had a bunch of concentric circles. It had seven circle shapes on different lines of this, and then it had arrow pointing to one. I was wondering if maybe they were trying to communicate one continent that needed the food, because maybe they figured out that those circles that we had in our Midwest was the way of growing food, and they were trying to tell us where it needed to go.
Are you talking about the ones that you saw overhead, or other circles that you've seen on the internet and so forth?
No, I've seen, I think it was in Scotland was that particular
Okay, sure. Well, again, we don't always know the origin of these crop circles. It's very easy to jump to conclusions. If you're one of the people that believe people do all of them, you're going to immediately try to ascribe it to people. If you think that it's extraterrestrial or something, you're going to say that. We don't know without going on the ground there and really taking a look. And even then, it's very hard to know. But you'd have to imagine of the ones that are made by extraterrestrials. I don't
that's
know.
That's what I mean, is that they're by extraterrestrials. They're using it for a map to show where they came from, because maybe they think that our circle is inset in the square plot the farmer's farming, like there in Kansas. When you look at it from an aerial view, maybe they're looking at that as a means of us communicating our location, and they're giving us a return address.
It's a possibility. There's just so much we don't know about it. It could be a locational marker. It could be kind of like an acupuncture point on the Earth, because we know the Earth is really stressed right now. Maybe they're attempting to hold things together by putting a little energy in here or there. I mean, it could be like a map. We just don't know, but it's certainly one distinct possibility. And I think, by the way, that's why those balls of light go over them later, to check them out, to see what the energy is, to get some sort of reading of the circle. That's why you see the balls of light around the crop circles.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right,
thanks, Crystal. East of the Rockies, welcome to the show. You're on with Dr. Simeon Hine. Hi there. Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
This is Russ from the Tampa Bay area.
All right, Russ.
Florida. And my question was about what are the residual effects from these crop circles, if any?
Good question. The effects of the crop circles seem to fade away with time, often within the period of a week. The one that I really affected our batteries a lot in 1999 by the so-called Devil's Den area near Marlboro, not that far from Avery, you know, I went back to that circle over a period of days, and gradually it affected my batteries twice on two different days, but gradually the effects faded away, and I even went back there later, October of that year, to see if there was any residual effect, and I didn't find anything. In that particular circle, there was no effect on my static meter. The batteries were fine. So it seems to suggest that the energy that's there, it's not just part of the ground. It has something to do with the crop, and once the crop changes over time, possibly, or as it dries out, the effects go away. Now, there is another effect that we see the next season, is that where the crop circle has been, the crop seems to grow back faster.
That was my next question, was regrowth.
Yeah, now this is interesting. We actually had seeds tested by a seed laboratory in one of the circles from, I think it was around 2001. And one of the tour members on one of our crop circle tour actually knew someone that worked at a seed laboratory, and he took the seeds. And what he said is that there had been genetic changes to the seed within the crop circle at a very relatively high level of confidence. Some people have found that the seeds grow back faster if you plant them, and that's the work of Levengood and others. But other people have found that they grow slower. So it's not a consistent effect, but it does seem to leave an effect on the wheat, and other people have even found effects in the soil. So there seems to be effects in the area that fade away. There's electrical effects that fade away pretty quickly, and then there seem to be effects in the plants that seem to even last into the next season.
Marvelous. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Ed Dames, of course, you're aware of him, Simeon. I think he and his group have developed some kind of new remote viewing technique.
Right. That's what he was talking about on the show. And, of course, we've done that from time to time, too. We invented a procedure. I don't know exactly what Ed's doing. He didn't talk about it all that much because it's kind of new. We invented something called UniView, which is our procedure. And it actually wasn't our idea originally. Someone that had worked in the government a long time ago suggested we come up with an abbreviated system that could be taught pretty quickly to people rather than, you know, over a period of a couple of days. And we created something you can teach in about 20 minutes, and that's what I teach to groups when I go around and give lectures. It's an abbreviated CRV system, which has just all the basic elements, can be taught pretty quickly. And we use it for beginners. It's not quite as accurate as the full system, but you get about 60, 70% of the same information. So I think these systems can evolve and change over time, and they can become more accurate and a little more flexible.
Are younger people more apt to have remote viewing talents than older people?
Yeah, I would say that to the extent that they haven't been as domesticated, so to speak, as conditioned to fit into our kind of educational system or economic systems where you have to be kind of very predictable and accountable to other people. When you're still young and you're still kind of active with your imagination, you know, someone asked before about children going into crop circles. I think the same thing applies to RVers. I mean, children seem to be able to do this naturally. You know, they kind of talk spontaneously about things that they're perceiving. And as we grow older, we tend to push that away because it doesn't quite fit into our social milieu, and people think we're kind of weird if we're just kind of talking about our imaginary friends. But I think, you know, kids are naturally good viewers, and it takes adults, just like it takes adult dancers, a long time to get that flexibility they naturally had as kids. It takes adults some training. That's why we have classes in this, to get back to that level where you're just describing what you're spontaneously perceiving without thinking about it or judging it or editing it, just writing it down. You know, kids can do that a lot more effectively, I think, because they just haven't been trained how not to do it yet.
You know, it's interesting. So far, all these calls that are coming in randomly, everyone wants to know about remote viewing as opposed to info on crop circles. I find that fascinating, Simeon.
Yeah, well, you know, it's whatever whatever angle you want to take on it. I see them as two sides of the same coin, or maybe a four-sided coin. They're all aspects of multidimensional communication, and that's why they both interest me a lot. They're both about humans' ability to use shapes, either in crop circles or ideograms on a piece of paper, to kind of transcend our physical reality and get kind of this subterranean information, however it gets to us. They're both represent how people can kind of get aspects to multidimensional information. That's why they both. And then there are other ways to do this, George, too. There's spirit communications and Mark Macy calls instrumental trans-spirit communication, kind of communicating with people on the other side. There are a lot of different aspects to this, but those are two particular things that interest me a lot.
Spirit communications. Let's talk about that when we come back and finish up with final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Our guest is Dr. Simeon Hine. We're going to talk about the alien autopsy film that was on Fox Television a couple years ago on our next Coast to Coast program. And by the way, with our After Dark newsletter, you're still getting 14 issues for the price of 12. Take advantage of that. Read all about the special stories in After Dark. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Or you just want to order online, you just go to coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back. It's our final segment now with our special guest tonight, Simeon Hine. Simeon, what's on the platter for you in the future? What are some of the new projects?
Well, we're excited about our return trip to England next summer to engage in Project Avebury. And I just want to mention, I mean, people can come along with us. This Crop Circle tour is open to the public. I mean, you can find out information right on the Opening Minds website. And, you know, we encourage people to go into the crop circles. It's something you got to experience yourself. So that's one of the things that's coming up, is to go with the regular people and Coast listeners over to England. And as I mentioned before, to see if we can affect these kind of quantum detection devices with our intention. Wouldn't that be exciting?
Oh, sure. Now, do they need to bring any equipment or anything?
No, we supply all the equipment, and we stay in just really first-class hotels and eat at great restaurants, and we visit sacred sites. We really want to see if we get this group of people together and we do this meditation with Dr. Joachim Koch from Germany, who's been working with these sort of experiments for a while. He's been making circles for years in England to see if he can communicate with the larger intelligence that's out there. We want to see if group meditation in a crop circle, in a sacred site, could create a measurable effect. A lot of the criticism of what we're talking about here, people could say, well, you don't have the results. It's just speculation. And that's true until we have some measurable results. And we can show that the device acts one way before the meditation and a different way afterwards. That would be a lot of fun to see if that happens. Well,
Dr. Joaquin, was he successful in his experiments so far?
Yes, he worked. The team is called Koch and Kyborg, and we're going to work with them this summer again. They're successful in the sense they make circles, and they often, when we've worked with them in the past, they've made a circle, and then we've done a group meditation nearby, or a group meditation at a couple different places on the earth at the same time. It's been synchronized, or in a couple different sacred sites around England. And once, while we were doing this, we had a ball of light appear right in the field next to where we were doing the meditation on Woodbower Hill. In fact, there's a picture of it in Opening Minds. A German colleague of theirs actually took a picture of the hill where we were meditating, and as a group, about 50 of us. And then when the film was developed, there was one of those anomalous balls of light. And so is it attracted to the energy we're generating? Is it just a coincidence? I don't know, but it's very intriguing. That's the sort of thing we're interested in finding more about.
Back to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, this is Richard.
Hey, Richard.
I'm up here in Visalia right now, but I wanted to talk to you about a certain thing that happened to me without a body experience. Back in the 80s, I was dating a girl, but I wasn't really sure she was right in my mind for my heart. And I was in deep, deep prayer. And it's like I left my body and somebody held me by the waist, and it was dark outside, and it was really pitch black dark. And I left, and somebody was holding me, and I went to go to this girl's house that I was dating, but I didn't feel anything. And as I was traveling above the cities, and I was going to her house, it just got, the feeling wasn't there, the spiritual feeling or whatever I was doing, because I was trying to control it, and I just let go. And as I was going through the air, and I was going past these streets and stuff, I was moved towards this house. And when I looked in front of this house, there was a white car. And then, boom, I was back where I was at, in my bedroom. Weeks later, I was with some friends, and I went to this house, and I didn't realize it was there. And I met a girl, and we found love, but I broke it off later on. And just, I couldn't believe that, you know, what was going on, but I forgot about the remote viewing. And I got down on my knees, and I prayed, and I thought about this. And then all these things came back to me in my mind about going through this remote viewing of leaving my body and going down the streets and traveling through the air. And when I was there in my room praying, it all came back to me, and boom, I realized the house. Boom, I realized the car. Boom, all these things. That car was her brother's. And it was late at night, and I was really afraid of what I had done, so I got back in contact with this girl. And then I tried to explain this to her, because we're very religious people, you know. And she goes, that white car is my brother's, and I've never met John before in his car. And one day, about a week or two later, after I told her this, he pulled up, because he lived across town, and he was married to another lady. And I said, there's the car. And she goes, that's my brother's. That's the one I saw in the front yard. And she totally believed me. Another time.
Well, hold on. Obviously, Simeon, a remote viewing session?
Yeah, that's spontaneous remote viewing. And you'll often find a lot of times that when there's a situation in your life or people that you're related to, that you will just spontaneously view a location because it matters to you in some way. It's significant to you. And your subconscious will just go there, and that seems to me what's going on here. It's spontaneous RV.
Richard, I got to move on. I got so many other calls and not a lot of time. Thank you for calling. We'll go next to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Chris calling from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Chris. Go ahead, sir.
I had a question. I seem to have a propensity for, I guess what I've heard referred to as lucid dreaming.
Yes.
That period between wakefulness and sleeping. Excuse me, but often I have vivid imagery of kind of mundane places or things that I have familiarity with. I've never actually dabbled with remote viewing, and I was wondering also if you know of if your guest knows of any correlation between that sort of lucid dreaming or mind state and remote viewing, and also to kind of explore my own through my own ways. How would your guest suggest someone like myself explore if it's possible for me to remote view or if I have the talent or capability?
Well, you've asked a lot of questions there, and let me do my best to answer them.
Sure.
It seems that lucid dreaming, astral travel, out-of-body experience, and remote viewing are kind of on a scale of intensity. RV would be the least intense in the sense that you're sitting there with a pen and paper, you're writing down your perceptions, and the session ends, and you're really kind of in complete control of the whole thing. And then you kind of move to a greater degree of intensity with astral travel or out-of-body or lucid dreaming, and it's more of a direct experience, more of a 3D experience. And so what you're describing is kind of more of an intense version of what we do with RV. But there are people even like Dale Graff, who from the Air Force, that did this kind of dream viewing when these techniques were being developed, where he would give people viewing targets at night and then have them first thing in the morning write down their dreams. And you'd be surprised how often those dreams really match the target, you know, really directly. It's really interesting. So it seems that you can do this viewing in the dream state, but they all seem to be related. But just the distinction I would make, though, is that I think when you're doing RV, I don't think you're going anywhere. I think you're simply, as we said in the beginning of the show, kind of resonating with the target, tuning into it like a radio wave. I don't think you're going there anymore, that you're going to the radio stations that you listen to on your radio. You're receiving the signal. But when you do lucid dreaming and astral travel, those sorts of things, I think you're getting to the state where you actually may be physically, an aspect of you may be physically traveling around. But RV seems like the least amount of that sort of process. But to the last aspect of your question about how you can improve it, this is why I'm so encouraged by some of these ideas I've been talking about planetary intelligence and so forth. I think there's lots of ways to increase that intelligence because it all has to do with what we call the undermind, subconscious mind. Anything that you do that gets you in touch with the communications between your mind and your body-mind sort of practices, meditation, athletics, any sort of music, and anything that really kind of gets you to slow down, get in touch with yourself a little bit, and mainly, the most important thing here is to kind of create the coherency between the different aspects of your body and your mind and your belief systems, that kind of coherency, which you kind of have to do in a slower state. Anything like that will increase your RV ability because it increases your intuition, and we know to really work effectively with the subconscious, got to be slow. Can't do it too fast.
Next up, Wild Card Line, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Taylor from Minnesota. How are you?
Hi, Taylor, sure.
Hey, I'm a theoretical physics student at the U, and I was thinking about how this could be done. I've been puzzling it for a while because I've been on hold, and I've been rolling around in my mind, and I was thinking about this in terms of, like, a physics situation. Information travels at, like, the speed of light, you know, just like any other propagation wave. So in order to be able to actually look into the past or the future, you would actually have to be able to catch up with it or have some other means of doing that, like being able to pass a straight beam of light through a curved space. But I figured an out form. Maybe it isn't coming from the past or the future. Maybe it's just coming from the planet itself. I mean, all of human beings constitute one gigantic computer with all of that electrochemical phenomenon going on inside of them, and that would make a lot more sense. Because if you were to interact with the past or the future, you'd have all of these quantum problems too.
Right.
You know, you'd end up with all kinds. You'd end up with all kinds of paradoxes. So it isn't really possible to interact with either of those things on the physical level. But you may be able to interact with the entirety of human knowledge.
Yeah, kind of like an Akashic record somewhere where it's all stored.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise, you have like a two-way trip at the speed of light, which means that you know it would be way too slow.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. There's a couple possibilities there. One is what I call structured resonance. And structured resonance is when the crystalline aspects of your physiology interacts with the crystalline aspects of the earth, and there's kind of a resonance there, a kind of coherency, mm-hmm. and you begin to pick up on the information from the earth directly.
Well, not to mention that we're increasing the electromagnetic field around the whole planet, like, exponentially all the time, and the sun is adding all this extra energy,
right.
which would act like a gigantic resonator cavity.
Right. That's certainly a possibility that it has to do with where we are and that our viewing skill is somehow related to being right next to the planet. There's another possibility, though. You might consider the fact that possibility that light moves faster than the speed of light. And Dr. Tiller calls that magnetoelectric. It's theorized that there's certain particles that go faster than the speed of light. And from all the research that we know about RV, it doesn't seem to be an electromagnetic signal, because when there was research done by sending viewers down in the submarine off of San Francisco, their viewing ability didn't decrease as they went very deep into the water. But if it was a radio-type signal, it would. So some people theorize that this is not an electromagnetic signal, and that it's not even bound by the speed of light, that it's somehow holographic, it's instantaneous. And that's just another way to look at it, and that would avoid all those paradoxes. But, of course, if you're just reading a record that's very physically close to us in a sense, vibrationally close to us, then you wouldn't engage those paradoxes either, because you're not really going anywhere. You're simply reading a kind of an Akashic-type record. So that's certainly a possibility, too.
Do you see the day, Simeon, when we really learn how to interpret what crop circles might be saying?
I think so, and I think to do that, we need to really engage them a lot more. You know, a lot of researchers have thought, I'm sure you're aware of this, that we shouldn't be making them, and we should just kind of let them appear. We should interfere with the process. But I take the other point of view. I think crop circles are there, just like RV, to experiment with, to play with, to see what they do when we make them, and what happens when we're out there at night, and what happens when we go back the next day with our equipment. And I think through that process, yeah, it's kind of like we're going to learn a new language. And maybe even it's like learning how to build a new technology. I really see it like a new technology, because RV, in a sense, is a mine technology. And crop circles are, in a sense, a kind of a natural agri-technology. You're just taking plants, which no one would ever think could generate energy. You're arranging them in a coherent shape, and this energy is kind of coming out of there. And it's only a matter of time through experimentation till we find a way to kind of make that something that's consistent, that could be very interesting or useful. We don't really know what it could become, but yeah, I think eventually right now it's like a puzzle, but I think eventually we'll figure out more what it means, and that's part of the fun of being involved with it.
West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, hello. This is Faith from Vista, California.
Hi, Faith.
Hi. The show has changed my life. It's just amazing.
Well, wonderful.
Thank you, guys. But I'm just going to make a little quick comment and then ask you one question. My comment is, well, when I was a little girl, I was raised without TV, but I used to always have these images of craft and UFO. At recess, I would look in the sky, and I just had this feeling that they were there. I just couldn't see them. But I have seen some now that I'm older. But I used to think, too, like, what are we going to do with all the cars in the world one day when we're not using them? Maybe we'll just make huge, giant, like, sculptures out of them, or, like, super slides for the kids or something. But my question is, do you think it'll be like the next 30 years, or kind of an idea of when we'll be flying around in some of these craft, maybe making some circles as well, or whatever? Just when do you think this could happen?
Well, you know, we don't know, but if we develop the technology on our own, we never know when hovercraft are going to replace cars. I mean, you already see people are developing hovercraft right now to replace cars, and we don't know. Is it 10 years away before we start flying around? And there's a lot of technical issues, obviously, to deal with before we have everyone flying around their own hovercraft. Huh. But once we make contact with the extraterrestrials, I mean, I'm convinced it's something that's going to happen, and the kind of disclosure we need could happen any day. I mean, but I'm sure the whole process will take decades, because it would really be a shock.
There's a lot of corporations who exactly just want to...
Right, we won't be using oil all of a sudden, which I'm sure a lot of us won't really regret.
Yeah.
If you look at the gas pump prices, but it would change a lot, and so it really does need to be done gradually. I mean, you're talking completely different. It's like someone else coming here and showing us their technology and all sorts of different things. It has a lot of impacts on us, so it's got to be done carefully. I think it'll take time. I think the extraterrestrials wouldn't really want to shock us too much either. I don't think they want us to become dependent on them, but eventually we will be riding around in their craft, and you know what? Someday we'll be somebody else's extraterrestrial. We'll be the UFO.
That's so true.
Yeah,
that's
so
very true. Well, thank you guys, and have a great night. And
thanks, Faith.
Thank you.
Right,
thanks.
Okay. We've had a guest over the last couple times, Dr. Michael Sala first, who now is taking a different position, Simeon, and then Eric Julien, who's a former French military air traffic controller.
Right, yeah.
Julien believes we're going to get hit by a comet on May 25th. Michael Sala believed in Julien. Now he does not. Now he says he's wrong, his calculations are wrong, nothing's going to happen. Is this something you can take a look at or your group can take a look at? It's May 25th, and he says a comet or fragments of will hit the planet.
Sure. We can give it a shot.
Okay.
And I'll try to get back to you before then. I heard the show last night, by the way, and I did listen to that. And,
all right.
I don't know one way or another. I mean, I don't have the information. We can certainly view it and see if we get anything on that particular date or if it's just another day on planet Earth.
He had his heavy French accent, didn't he?
Very heavy, but he was struggling through it, but he explained his point of view. We may not agree with it, but it's interesting to hear these different points of view.
I think so, too. Well, that'll be fascinating if you could do that, and also Richard's project to see about Mars 65 million years ago.
Sure.
Like to get a take on what he would love to know what the planet looked like then, even though he has his own suspicions.
That'll be a long-term project, and we can kind of summarize what we've done so far and get back to you on that and keep looking at it.
Have you remote viewed where Natalie Holloway is in Aruba? Because Ed Dames has believed she's in a lobster crate dumped in the ocean.
No, we haven't done that one. We actually tend to avoid really high-profile cases.
You do?
Well, if you know, here's the thing. If we're contacted, and I'm actually getting this kind of guidance from Beverly Yeagers. You know the viewers.
Oh, I know Beverly.
Yeah,
really?
Right. And sure. She said we only view targets like that when the police ask us to, or someone they start, because it's very complicated just to kind of butt in there, and the family gets very emotional about it.
Oh, I understand.
And it's very complicated to do that sort of thing. So if someone comes forward to us and says, can you help us? I do this when people ask me personally to do it for their own lives, but in this case, we haven't done it just because of the complexities involved.
Simeon, thanks. I'll see you next time, my friend.
Thank you very much, George, and thanks to everyone at Coast for such a great show.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, Ross Mitchell, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. And until then, be safe, everyone.